Up first, though, on a Tuesday edition of Dantown, we go to the telephone line and welcome in the founder and the chief scientist of Hydroveeb. He'll be speaking tomorrow in the Buchanan Alumni Hall at the University of Maine, delivering the Libby Lecture. Dr. Eric Roy joins us. Eric, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Excited to hear about what you'll be talking about tomorrow. But first, a little background on you. How in the world did this journey begin for you that has led you all the way to Shark Tank, to selling your company, and now still hanging in there as the chief scientist and delivering this lecture tomorrow?
Yeah, it's been wild. I think it's been a little, I think the last time we spoke was the day before my Shark Tank episode aired. But yeah, Hydroveeb, it's been a wild ride. Hydroveeb started as a charitable side project in response to Flint, where basically I was making water filters and donating them to folks in Flint, Michigan. And that slowly turned into a company, and then a small company got bigger. We aired on Shark Tank. It got bigger after that, obviously, and then fast forward 18 months, we sold the business to the arguably the most trusted name in water filtration. So it's been an absolute wild ride.
Where did this interest in water start for you?
Well, I mean, I've been working in water. I was doing this math. It's been almost 20 years, if you add it all up, doing research, like going back to my time at Colby College doing lake research. And then, you know, after Colby, getting a degree in chemistry, went to University of Maine and studied oceanography and chemistry, and it was kind of water-based. So I've been working in water a long time.
Well, obviously the Shark Tank experience was something unique there. And we've talked about it off the air, but you had some offers. Mark Cuban got close, but ultimately you decided to go in a different direction.
So what happened on Shark Tank is I made an on-air deal with Mark Cuban. And what that means, you know, and again, with Shark Tank, Shark Tank's real. They know nothing about the companies other than me. So, you know, we made an on-air deal, but that deal didn't end up closing. So Mark was never part of the company, but he gave some wisdom during the taping that I definitely pulled forward with me and was extremely helpful in helping grow and sell and ultimately sell the business.
And you ended up selling it, as you mentioned, to one of the biggest names in the industry, the folks from Culligan.
Culligan International, yeah. So we closed that deal in July 2021. That was wild, yeah.
But you have stayed on. You're still the chief scientist for the company. So how many different hats are you wearing?
A lot of hats. So, yeah, so, you know, Culligan, the big reason why I sold to Culligan is we really shared the same mission. The mission was to continue growing Hydroveeb and doing good, and really kind of, you know, scale the good that we were doing under my ownership. So there was no reason for me to leave. It was just kind of nice to disconnect the business from my bank accounts and connect them to much larger companies' banking system. So yeah, still, you know, it's been about 2 years since we sold the business and, you know, chief scientist and still running the Hydroveeb business, and we got some big projects in the hopper, and yeah, right now, no reason to leave. So it's all good right now.
We're talking with Eric Roy. He'll be delivering the Libby Lecture in Natural Resource Policy tomorrow at the Buchanan Alumni Hall, noontime at the University of Maine. So speaking of wearing hats, as both a scientist and an entrepreneur, how do those worlds sometimes collide?
That's a really good question, and we'll be talking a lot about that tomorrow. But really, like, I'm a huge advocate of having domain experts start companies. The reason why is, you know, you're getting such a head start on your competition if you actually know what you're talking about on day one. And what that allows you to do is just behave more ethically and understand where the problems actually lie and create kind of the shortest path to making, you know, the product or service or whatever it is that you're making. So I'm a huge advocate of having domain experts run companies, not work for, you know, people in finance and stuff like that. So yeah, that's kind of where that's going to be the flavor of what I'm talking about tomorrow.
So, and this is a pretty open-ended question we could talk for hours about, but how did the idea of clean water, which seems like a pretty much a basic need for citizens in a thriving country, how did something like that ever become political?
That's a head-scratcher. You'd think that if you could agree on one thing, all sides could agree on one thing, it's that the stuff coming out of the tap should meet a certain standard. And, you know, it's become political, I think, because it's something that's so close to everyone, because we all consume it every day. So anytime that there's something important, I think the politicians try to find a way to create a wedge and get on one side of the issue or not.
Well, and clearly in the case of Flint, leaders there failed the people, which to me makes it even more mysterious that we live in a time in America that I certainly couldn't have imagined when I was a kid that there would be this fairly widespread distrust of science in some quarters.
Well, I think what happened in Flint, the thing that was really... what happened in Flint wasn't the first time it happened. This happened in Washington, D.C. in the mid-2000s, where they switched up the water chemistry and it ended up, you know, pulling lead from the pipes. And it's also not the last time it happened. Even after Flint, this happened in Newark, New Jersey, and in a couple other cities around the country as well. So, I mean, it's kind of one of these things where you gotta think about these things before you make these changes at the municipal level. Otherwise, there can be consequences.
We like to think we live in a pretty clean state here in Maine, but what are the risks that are out there for our own water quality?
Well, yeah, no, it's a really good question. So, I mean, where I live personally in Trenton, Maine, there are a lot of places that have what are called forever chemicals in the water. There's also a lot of places that if you get your water from a private well, there can be arsenic and uranium and radon, and that has nothing to do with pollution. It's just that's the nature of, you know, the bedrock in the area that we live. So, you know, get your water tested for sure.
And so as you go forward with what you're doing with HydroViva, and you've always been about giving back, how can others kind of pick up that mantle if they're perhaps starting a new business, or if they're still students in school but they have an idea of what they want to do? How do you approach giving back, but at the same time, you're finding a way to pay the bills and put dinner on the table?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things that I'll be talking about tomorrow is even if something that doesn't cost any money at all, is if you're a domain expert and you can partner with people that have large audiences, you can work together with them to make sure that good information gets out to the audience, right? I think we've all seen over the past however long that misinformation and just bad information is something that's running around. So I'm a major advocate for people that actually know what they're talking about to partner with people that have massive audiences to make sure that good information is what people are consuming.
Well, and where can
cost anything?
Yeah, where can people go to get that good information? What are some decent sources?
Well, we do what we can on water quality at HydroViva. We do a lot there. There's a growing number of university professors that are kind of starting to communicate in the venues that the public spends a lot of time in. Right. So on social media and things like that. So, you know, just what I always tell people is if you're reading content written or spoken about by someone who, you know, the day before they were talking about something completely different, they're probably not a domain expert on what they're talking about. So just make sure to see who the messenger is.
So what does the future hold for water in this country?
Well, the big thing that I got to tip my hat to the Biden administration on is they're really putting a lot of effort into these PFAS chemicals, otherwise known as forever chemicals. These are the things that they just do not break down in the environment, and they're really toxic. So figuring out what the water quality standards should be, and then also trying to figure out, okay, if you live in an area that has high levels of these chemicals, how do we get solutions into your home now? Because legislation is going to take decades, right? So how do we fix the problem now while we wait for the legislative solution to kind of work its way through the process?
What do you say to those people whose reply to concerns about the environment often are something like, well, you know, the world has been around a long time. Earth has survived things that are worse than us. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, the Earth will survive. It's whether or not we're a player in the future of it, right? So, I mean, you know, I tend to take an optimistic view on things and think that we can actually make these differences. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to wake up every day doing what I do.
Eric Roy, he is the founder, chief scientist at HydroViv. Tomorrow at 12 noon, the Buchanan Alumni Center on the campus of the University of Maine. He'll be delivering the Libby Lecture in Natural Resource Policy. So get up there and see it, and you'll learn some stuff there. Eric, great talking with you. Good luck with everything tomorrow, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Rich. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. It's Eric Roy with us here on Downtown as we get it started on a Tuesday afternoon.